Joel Vaughn, my wife Pat Vaughn. Together, we are in the third of a series on healing broken relationships. And we've been making a kind of progression. Started on Monday with some of the reasons why, the main reasons why, perhaps, relationships break down. Talked yesterday about the ways in which expectations, unrealistic expectations, what we call great expectations, and other irrational ways of thinking get in the way in relationships between people. And tonight we want to move more toward how relationships can be healed. We've talked a good bit about the problem. We want to begin tonight and then tomorrow and on Friday talking about ways in which relationships can be healed and helped. Tonight's presentation is entitled Walk a Mile in My Shoes, and I think you'll see why as we talk about the need for acceptance. As we talk about the need to be able to accept the person with whom we are in conflict with. I'm going to throw out some ideas about that acceptance and that process, and then Pat is going to lead us in an exercise that demonstrates how we can how we can apply that acceptance in our life. When we say try, it implies that we may not be able to do it. So we never like to use the word try, but rather speak more in the affirmative. A number of years ago, Joe South, a country and western singer, sang a song that went something like this. Walk a mile in my shoes, walk a mile in my shoes. If you want to know what it's like to really sing the blues, walk a mile in my shoes. The vast majority of hurting relationships and broken relationships involve the contributions of two people, at least two people, not one. I think a notable exception to that, and I'll state it right off the bat, is child abuse. There is no reciprocal way in which we can assume blame for children in that kind of situation. And there may be other relationships where we've been hurt, where perhaps it's more of a one-way street than a two-way street. But almost all broken relationships, almost all relationships in conflict, are shared conflict. Relationships that involve dual responsibility at some level for the conflict. In psychotherapy, we like to talk about the 30% rule. The 30% rule is that in any conflict between two people, each person in the relationship and in the conflict has to assume at least 30% of the problem. Now sometimes, yes, maybe it's 70, 30, or 30, 70, or 50, 50, or what have you, but I have yet to see a situation, again, other than the exceptions we've indicated, where each person doesn't have some role in that conflict. I've seen some pretty good arguments around who has the 70 and who has the 30, but I have yet to see any situation where that shared responsibility doesn't exist. So even in those painfully one-sided, destructive relationships where we've been hurt deeply by another, we have to see somehow who that person is and, in a sense, understand why they have done what they have done, or maybe where they have come from, or what has contributed to those difficulties. Healing the hurts we don't deserve still means seeing the person who has hurt us in a new or different way. I quoted you Joe South's song. There's also, I think, a more poetic and a higher level explanation of this perspective of seeing the other side from Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. He said, "If we could read the secret history of our enemies, we would find in each man's life sorrow and suffering enough to disarm all hostility." Think about that for a moment. Let me read it again. If we could read the secret history of our enemies, we would find in each man's life sorrow and suffering enough to disarm all hostility. The people who hurt us are hurting in some way. There is a reason for conflict in relationships between people. Again, then, to help heal a broken relationship, we must look for the hurt and the humanness in the lives and experiences of those who have hurt us. If we want to heal the relationship, if we want to heal the conflict, if we want to heal the pain, we have to use what Lewis B. Smeads, I think I'm saying his name right, in his book Forgive and Forget, calls magic eyes. Before we came here, I wasn't aware of this book. Pat discovered this book in the bookstore, and I've been reading, gotten about halfway through it. And there's a very interesting part here that I want to read to you. And it's a fable. I don't want to read the whole thing because it's a little bit long, but it's right at the beginning of Smead's book, and it's called Fouque's Fable, F-O-U-K-E. It starts out in the village of Faken in innermost Friesland. There lived a long, thin baker named Fouque, a righteous man with a long, thin chin and a long, thin nose. The basis of the story, however, is that Fouque also has a wife, and his wife cheats on him. Cheats on him because Fouque is not the most responsive and caring man, but rather tends to be somewhat righteous and better than. Fouque then experiences a great deal of anger toward his wife. But to the surprise of the town, he does not reject his wife, but stays with her. However, we pick up the fable where it explains his behavior. Fouque only pretended to forgive Hilda so that he could punish her with his righteous mercy. But Fouque's fakery did not sit well in heaven. So each time that Fouque would feel his secret hate toward Hilda, an angel came to him and dropped a small pebble, hardly the size of a shirt button, into Fouque's heart. Each time a pebble dropped, Fouque would feel a stab of pain, like the pain he felt the moment he came on Hilda, feeding her hungry heart from a stranger's larder. Thus he hated her the more. His hate brought him pain, and his pain made him hate. The pebbles multiplied, and Fouque's heart grew very heavy with the weight of them, so heavy that the top half of his body bent forward so far that he had to strain his neck upward in order to see straight. Weary with hurt, Fouque began to wish he were dead. The angel who dropped the pebbles into his heart came to Fouque one night and told him how he could be healed of his hurt. "There was one remedy," he said, "only one, for the hurt of a wounded heart. Fouque would need the miracle of magic eyes. He would need eyes that could look back to the beginning of his hurt and see his Hilda not as a wife who betrayed him, but as a woman who needed him and who was weak in her own way. Only a new way of looking at things through the magic eyes could heal the hurt flowing from the wounds of yesterday." Fouque protested. "Nothing can change the past," he said. Hilda is guilty, a fact that not even an angel can change. Yes, poor hurting man, you are right, the angel said. You cannot change the past. You can only heal the hurt that comes to you from the past, and you can heal it only with the vision of the magic eyes. And how can I get your magic eyes, pouted Fook? Only ask, desiring as you ask, and they will be given you. And each time you see Hilda through your new eyes, one pebble will be lifted from your aching heart. Fook could not ask at once, for he had grown to love his hatred. But the pain of his heart finally drove him to want and to ask for the magic eyes that the angel had promised. So he asked, and the angel gave. Soon Hilda began to change in front of Fook's eyes. Wonderfully and mysteriously, he began to see her as a needy woman who loved him instead of a wicked woman who betrayed him. The angel kept his promise. He lifted the pebbles from Fook's heart one by one, though it took a long time to take them all away. Fook gradually felt his heart grow lighter. He began to walk straight again, and somehow his nose and his chin seemed less thin and sharp than before. He invited Hilda to come into his heart again, and she came. And together they began a journey into their second season of humble joy. I don't know if you see yourself in Fook, in that need to hang on to anger and hatred. I know I see myself in that. Conscious of how thin my nose is and my chin. But that concept of magic eyes is exactly what we mean by seeing the other side, walking a mile in the shoes of someone else. I don't know if any of you have seen the movie Harry and the Hendersons. If you haven't seen the movie, I commend it to you. Outstanding movie, great family fun. And it talks about Sasquatch. Or actually, it's a movie about Sasquatch and Sasquatch discovered. You all of you know who Sasquatch is, right? He lives here in the Cascade Mountains. Bigfoot. John Lithgow plays Henderson, a family man who with his family is in the Cascade Mountains camping, and he's also the son of a sporting goods store owner, and he has lots of guns and shoots lots of animals and has hunted all the big game. And they're coming home from a week in the mountains, and they're coming down the road, and all of a sudden they run into something unexpectedly around a corner, knock it off the side of the road, and it's apparently dead. It's this big furry mound that smells to high heaven. And they go over and look at him, and they discover it's Bigfoot. Henderson immediately sees the opportunity to make millions, and he gets him on top of his station wagon and takes him home. But they discover that, to their surprise, later that night, as they leave him in the garage on the top of the station wagon, that Bigfoot isn't dead. And Bigfoot comes into the house and into the refrigerator, turning it over in the refrigerator throughout the kitchen. And Bigfoot is big, about 8 feet tall and hairy and really monstrous looking in lots of ways. He's wrecking the house, and they run out of the bedroom and get out away from Bigfoot. And later on they call him Harry, so that's what we'll call him now. They get away from Harry and get outside, and then he runs to the garage and he grabs his hunting rifle. And on the rifle is a large telescopic sight, and he looks through the telescopic sight into the window where Bigfoot is ripping the walls apart. And what he's doing is he's tearing off of the walls all of the stuffed animals that are there, all of the trophies that Henderson has shot. And he's about to kill him when he catches Bigfoot turning and looking at him, and through the scope of the rifle, he sees his eyes. And in his eyes, he sees the beauty in the person, the humanness in the beast. That's a little bit of what we mean by seeing the other side. Up to that point, as his house was being ransacked by this giant, hairy, foul-smelling Sasquatch, Henderson is only able to see the beast. But when he looks in his eyes, when he sees the tears that Sasquatch is shedding for the dead friends that hang on Henderson's walls in almost every room, he realizes that there's something more here than just someone or something that's wrecking his house. So, the healing eyes, Harry and the Hendersons, these make it clear, in order to begin to heal a relationship that's hurt or broken, we have to look for and find the hurt, the brokenness, the humanness, really, in those people who have hurt us. One of the ways, of course, in which we do this often as adults is through the process of psychotherapy. People come to understand where they have come from and what has happened, especially in their relationships with their parents. You know, a lot of criticism has been leveled at psychotherapy for blaming things on parents. If you hear somebody who has been in psychotherapy and blames their problems on their parents, you are talking to somebody who has not completed psychotherapy. Because the completion of psychotherapy is not to blame one's parents or to find all the causes for one's behavior in one's parents. The completion of psychotherapy is to understand those parents in the midst of what they did to you and what happened in your experiences. And the same is true in healing relationships with other people. To heal the relationship that we have with in conflict with somebody else is to come to understand something about who that person was, what that person did, and what they lived with. The pain and the difficulty in their life. There's an excellent book, by the way, that I've just also read about 2 months ago that I'm recommending to as many people as I can. It's called Making Peace with Your Parents, a book by Harold Bloomfield, a secular book by a psychiatrist who has written a couple of other self-help books. But in a very meaningful way, he talks about how we can go back and heal relationships, not just with people who are living, but with people who have died as well. Some of the ideas, not all of them, but some of them that we're talking about come out of that book. And I think you'd find it very readable and very helpful, especially if you're struggling in a relationship or with conflicts that go back into your past and that may involve your parents. So to heal ourselves in relationship with others, we need to learn to see ourselves as connected to one another, not separate from one another. We need to see ourselves as a family of people rather than separate individuals. We need to see ourselves as more like other people than more different than them. I had an experience when I was in my master's level internship program at Chicago State Hospital. Chicago State Hospital does not exist today as it did at that time, but at that time in 1965, it was basically a warehouse for the mentally ill and the severely mentally handicapped and mentally retarded. There were many very disturbed people there, and for years after being there, I experienced nightmares about a particular building that was about 7 stories high and housed about 800 to 900 very mentally ill people. And in my early months at the hospital, I had a real sense of distance. It was like I was in some kind of unreal situation. I couldn't understand the serious disturbance I saw, and I felt no relationship with the people that I worked with. Until one day, while walking on the grounds, actually I think I was going to lunch at the cafeteria, a young man came up to me and I realized it was a friend of mine. A guy that I played baseball with, who I graduated eighth grade with and went to high school with. And I said, Glenn, what are you doing here? And he said, they've got me locked up here, Joe. He said, you've got to get me out. I don't belong here. I said, you're right. I know you don't, Glenn. I'll get you out. I'll check your file. What ward are you on? He told me, and I went to the chief psychologist of that ward and asked to see his records and told him that I knew him. And he said, oh, yes, Glenn. Glenn's been here a number of times. Glenn believes that he is the king of a distant island and that we have captured him and taken him away from his kingdom. Talked about a number of other ways in which Glenn fit the diagnostic category we call paranoid schizophrenic. I went back and met with Glenn. I'd planned, as I'd left him, I told him I'd meet him the next day at lunch and we would talk. And then Glenn told me himself about that kingdom and about the severe hallucinations and delusions that he suffered from. But he didn't call them hallucinations and delusions. He talked about them as if they were real and wanted to convince me of them. It was at that point, I think, that I came to see that I was not very different than those other people at Chicago State Hospital, and that the patients there became real to me. They became real to me because I saw that I was more like Glenn than I was unlike him. Because here was a friend, here was a person I knew, here was not just some disturbed patient. We need to see then the humanness in our adversary. We need to see the hurt in those who have hurt us. We need to look to the lives and the experiences and the situations of those people we're in conflict with if we are to heal that conflict. We want to work with that idea a little bit today. And so I would like you to do something for a few minutes. I want you to think about a relationship or a person that you are in conflict with. And I want you to just go through your mind now for a few minutes while I'm talking. Go through your acquaintances, your family, your friends, perhaps it's somebody you work with, and think about and identify somebody in your own mind. You don't have to talk about this, you're not going to have to get up and say anything, you're not going to have to reveal anything, but I want you to see if you can identify someone who you are experiencing some conflict with at the present time. And then I want you to do one other thing before Pat comes and lead you in a little bit, a bit of an exercise around dealing with that conflict. I want you to think about that person, and I want you to think about two or three, better yet, three ways or three things that that person might be struggling with in their life or might have been struggling with in their life. I want you to think about what their handicaps might be. I want you to think about three handicaps. And those handicaps could be financial, they could be personal, they could be physical. Perhaps there's an actual handicap. Perhaps this is a person with an actual physical problem that might have led to a certain kind of attitude or approach to life. I want you to think of what their mental handicaps might be or might have been. I want you to think what you know about their past, about their family, or about their experiences. I want you to identify three things for yourself, and if you'd like, make a note of them. But I just want you to write down or think about three ways in which you might be able to understand their brokenness. I know you have a hurt with them. I know you have a problem with them. I'd like you to think about them for a moment and just see if you can identify those three ways. Now, in a minute, then, after you've done that, Pat's going to come up and I'm going to take you through an exercise that is called a relaxed visualization. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes, and Pat will tell you exactly what to do. She's going to lead you through it. If you'd like to participate in that, we invite you to participate, and I think you will find it very helpful. If you choose not to, that's okay too. You can just sit quietly. But Pat, maybe this would be a good point for you to come up and go ahead with that. Yes. I'll kind of stand at the back just to try to keep the distractions down in terms of people coming in.
What I'd like you to do is kind of find a comfortable spot, and if you're a little crowded, give yourself a little space, okay? So move around, and if you're wearing glasses, feel free to take them off. It might work better.
It's a little hard for them to hear you, Pat.
Oh.
I wonder if I move this mic closer. Go ahead, do it.
Okay, I'm glad to see the ladies putting their knitting down, any papers down. I'd like you to just close your eyes and just relax for a moment.
Is that better?
Can you hear me? As you begin to feel the quiet descend over you, take a few nice, easy, slow, deep breaths. As you breathe in, think of breathing in the peace and calm offered to us by Christ. And as you breathe out the tension and struggles of a worldly day. Again, breathe in the peace and calm offered to you by Christ and hold it. And now breathe out the tension and struggles of the day. Relax your mind and body and let go. For a few moments, block out any noise or disturbances you might hear inside or outside the room. You need not pay attention to it. In the same way, allow any distracting or random thoughts inside your head to pass through. You need not pay attention to them either for a few moments. Very good. You can relax and take a few minutes and moments for yourself. Moments you can use to see things in a new way. Now I want you to bring to mind a person you have been hurt by or in conflict with. See that person in your mind standing before you. Notice what they look like. Their face, the clothes they're wearing. See them as clearly and in as much detail as you can. Now, as you see them standing before you, you notice something around their neck. It is a chain attached at each end to a heavy piece of rough wood, almost like a railroad tie. Notice, too, that on that wood is something written. Look closely and read what is there. As the writing comes clearer, you see what it is. It's a description of their limitations, the problems and handicaps you know they labored under. It's a description of their brokenness. Notice how the weight of the wood and the heaviness of their burden makes their neck bend and their shoulders stoop, almost pulling them over and down. Understand more clearly how they were hurt and how that hurt may have contributed to their hurting you. How did they, out of their own hurt, their own struggle and handicaps, distort you? Now allow Christ to come into the picture. See the radiant, healing light that surrounds Christ. Both you and the other person are encompassed in God's healing light. Christ reaches over and lifts the heavy burden of brokenness, of wood and chain, from the neck of the person, and then places it around his own neck. As he does, the person's back straightens. They raise their head and neck, and they look different to you. You begin to see that person as whole, as the person they would be without the weight of their own hurts and brokenness. See yourself now for a few moments, healed and whole, both in the light and hope of Christ. Bring that image of healing and wholeness back with you to this room. After a moment, open your eyes and share part of your experience if you wish. Does anyone feel like sharing?
Before, when Joe was talking, I got three things, like you said. And then when I saw that piece of wood around the guy's neck, the middle one was something entirely different, which, in as I thought it through and worked it through, was more to the core of what was the problem. So the imaging brought out the more real
struggle and problem.
Yeah. Right. But it, following through, it was taken care of, as you had suggested.
Is it a positive experience?
Yes.
For you?
Yes.
Okay, good. Anyone else that'd like to share? I was appreciative no one fell asleep. Anyone else have any feelings about that exercise in general? Did you have a hard time with it?
Was it relaxing?
It's easier for me to see the person and see the problems than it was to feel the forgiveness and feel that the problems go away. I've fallen so far and then a lot of resistance. Or to feel that the other person can somehow change.
You know, my view of this would not be so much in this particular exercise that we would forgive, but that rather it could create an atmosphere in which we could again see with a different perspective. Talk a little bit more about some forgiveness techniques, that sounds so. I said it almost, I guess. But some ways in which we can use approaches to try to develop forgiveness, maybe, or to to practice our forgiveness, but I would see this more as kind of trying to see who and what is it about this other person that might have contributed to some of the conflict. But I think it's even in that, it's like Fouque, you know, the pebbles were taken away one at a time, and many times we have to go over and over looking in a new way. We don't always have that one glaring dramatic experience that clears everything up.
I think also, ultimately, in forgiving others, we end up forgiving ourselves. There's some powerful healing for ourselves in our ability to forgive others. Because we recognize our own limitations and that we're not perfect. So if we can arrive at it, it's difficult, it's not easy, I understand. Anything else?
Just in light of what you were saying tonight too, in looking at this other person, I saw myself in a totally different light too. In trying to see what his problem was, I visioned myself as entirely different than I have been towards the situation.
How were you different? Can you elaborate on that?
I saw the amount of myself that was contributing to it, where I hadn't thought I was part of it.
Okay. Okay. It was a positive experience for you then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. When Joe and I did this last time, and maybe you can help us too a little bit on this, how would you have felt if you were lifting off that heavy barrier that person was holding on to, as opposed to Christ? Do you think it would be more effective if you were lifting it off? Or did you like the image of Christ lifting it off? Right, I would have you as the person going over to that person, lifting off that closet or burden that they were carrying around. Chain, a piece of wood hung on them. So you feel it's more powerful when
I know this. You have to have something to visualize with what happens to you. I mean, you're not likely. You're not only the way you can do it.
Well, you know, I think sometimes our objective is try to change another person, but we really can't change another person. The only one that we can really change is ourselves. You can change your reaction towards the other person, or choose to not see the person, but you can't really change another person. Hard to pretend, huh? Okay, can you...
No, why don't you repeat the question?
She mentioned that sometimes it's very, very difficult to forgive some people because they won't change. And at the wrong people, do you think?
I think so.
Okay. Okay.
He needs to get that straight. You know, one of my thoughts to that would be, you know, talk about this business of it's... I think there are levels of forgiveness. I think complete forgiveness involves reconciliation. But complete forgiveness and reconciliation involves two people. And as Pat said, there are some, we cannot change directly other people. We can only work at the level of changing ourselves, our own reactions and our own feelings. And so many times we have to be content with working on ourselves and forgiving that person for their behavior, for the way in which they hurt us. But it does not necessarily mean we're going to end up arm in arm and reconcile in that sense. There are lots of relationships that can be forgiven, but that can't be reconciled. And so many times we fall short of that. And I think that's part of this world. I think ultimately forgiveness and reconciliation is a part of God's plan. But many times we have to stop short of that in this kind of thing. And here again, we're really moving ahead, and maybe we have to kind of think a little more about the kind of exercise we use here, but I guess I see a couple of steps on the way to forgiveness. One being first, that we have to see beyond the hurt that the person has caused us. And before we can forgive somebody, we have to see who that person is. And maybe it didn't come through as clearly, but we hope that in doing this kind of exercise with you that it would focus on that rather than that you would experience forgiveness through this particular exercise. Rather that you would experience a looking through magic eyes, if you will, or a way to see the person in a new way. Maybe it's not too much to expect that you would see that person the way Christ would see them. That there are limitations on all of us, that so much we want other people to accept those limitations in ourselves, but we're so hesitant to accept those limitations in others. We're so hesitant to allow for those shortcomings in others. And so I think the first step in forgiveness, especially if we've been hurt, is to understand or see that person differently. Because almost always our feeling is, you hurt me and you did it deliberately and it caused me pain. And so we develop pooks feelings, the hate, the resentment, the anger. And if we're going to forgive, we can't separate, we can't just jump around those feelings. We have to somehow come to terms with those feelings. How else can we do it except to see the person?
Personally, I think, depending on the situation and the person, I think there are some people that do not have to have the communication, okay, verbally. They just change their own behavior and reaction towards the person, okay? And ultimately, after a given period of time, that person starts relating to you differently, too. But, yeah, it's nice to have the other one, too, where you can communicate and directly deal with, you know,
ideal.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Or who's impossible. Some people can be, from our perspective, not that it's right or wrong, I mean, there are some people that we feel are difficult.
My experience in working with people in psychotherapy and counseling tells me that people can forgive move beyond conflict with people even when they cannot address them directly. As a matter of fact, the vast majority of times it seems to me that when we're struggling with somebody and when we need to move past the conflict with them, we don't really have an opportunity to talk with them. As a matter of fact, one of the mistakes that people often make is they discover something in counseling or psychotherapy, a feeling they have or an attitude they have or a conflict they have, and they go out, they say, well, I'm going to go talk to my mother about that. And often it's disastrous because that other person is not anywhere near where they are, can't hear it. Again, it's just the other half of the equation, at least 30% of the problem. And sometimes there can be reconciliation in that, but again, I think often we're stuck with falling short of that total reconciliation where we talk it through and forgive one another and move on from there. So I believe healing can occur without and with for people who are no longer living. But in a sense, it may be an incomplete kind of healing. It's a question here. In the case of?
In the case of someone who has died, as your magic eyes are speaking, every time this person comes to mind, if you try to think of them through Christ's eyes, is a forgiving process. And I think forgiveness is a process.
Yes. Very good. I think it's absolutely true. That's somewhere in my notes to say, but I didn't say. It's probably in tomorrow's notes. But forgiveness is a process. It's not typically a one-time event. And it's a working through. Again, as you rightly pointed out in the fable and in our own experience, we don't typically just say, okay, now I'm going to forgive you and sit quietly for a few moments and experiences a deep sense of forgiveness. It can be the start, though, of that. And if we choose, and if with God's help, we have many opportunities then to move beyond it. It's like mourning. Somebody dies, we don't just go to the visitation and the funeral, and then we're done with it. There's a period of time that we have to heal. It's a process. Other questions or thoughts?
I've found that it's much easier to forgive someone if you find out what motivates them to offend you.
Yeah.
I've had a couple of situations in my life where I didn't understand where the bitterness came from, but made these people that way, and the more I got to know about them, the more I could understand where they were hurting or where they were molded to feel that bitterness. And it was much easier then to forgive them. Mm-hmm.
And how did you find out?
Well, in both cases, it had to be relatives.
You talked with them, or
well,
they?
One of them had to be my mother.
Uh-huh.
I talked to my sisters, my brothers, and found out things that molded her. The other one is my mother-in-law. And talking to her, listening to her, it became apparent that there was some hurt, there was some scars in her childhood. It made it much easier for me to see why they didn't know what they were doing. But I think in order to forgive some people, you have to find out why they're doing what they're doing. You can't just say, well, I forgive you for doing this, then you may not.
Mm-hmm.
The next time it comes up, you go know, back to the same thing, you turn to forgiveness 7 times 7.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't know why they're acting that way, it's much easier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Certainly much much more complete in a way to be able to talk with that person if they'll tell you what has gone wrong between the two of you. When you have that kind of situation, then you have the participation of the other person. If you can somehow get people in a dialogue that says, what did I do? You know, or what happened to us? That is much more predictive, I would think, of forgiveness and reconciliation than not. So often, though, we don't have that, as you were talking about. This person won't talk with you now. She won't relate to you. She won't discuss the situation. And so we're stuck with the hurt without the understanding, without the awareness.
And we also have to remember, oftentimes, not always, but often, it's sometimes a misdirected thing at another person, and it doesn't come out to the person that really deserves it. So, I mean, before we get hurt, we have to analyze a little bit our hurt. You know, is this, do I deserve this hurt, or is this person being unreasonable to me, or are they hurting? I think we have to question that.
And I feel sorry for her. She is closing herself up, and everyone cares about her. she must be frightened, she must have been hurt down in some way, and she has decided that she's going to turn everybody away from her and cause this separation before they hurt her, is what it looks like. I mean, she's going to prevent anyone else from hurting her. She's just going to, she's going to keep them from getting close to her, and she's not going to allow herself. You have to care for her. I just sorry for her.
What do we do with somebody like that?
I try to imagine going in a role play in my mind.
How about praying for her? How about?
She I was visualizing going up to her, and it would be a very difficult thing to handle correctly, but I tried to wonder if this would work. Go up to her and just say, I'm feeling very bad. I get very strong feelings from you that you dislike me greatly. I cannot imagine what I've done to hurt you, but if there is something that I've done to hurt you, I would like to apologize for that, and I want you to know I care about you. And that may open or that may shut further away. I don't know. I try to envision what that kind of a conversation would do. But putting it, the I message, but putting it in terms of your feelings, what you are getting, without defense, putting her on the defense.
Well, yeah, again, there are people who do not want to reconcile and who won't let us reconcile with them, and it doesn't mean we would necessarily give up or and even worse, give back what we're getting. That would just escalate the conflict. On the other hand, sometimes there is not an easy way to that. Sometimes time is helpful.
You may perceive what within what from you. What you're saying is, would she be perfectly normal? And she has her right to do it. And you're trying to put her in a box. And she becomes my chicken. You've got the answer to say that. I mean, I feel her part more than I feel your part.
Well, again, conflicts are very complicated. It's like, sometimes we can only see one side, and that's a side that's presented to us, and getting behind it and getting to it. Sometimes a mediator, a third person, might be able to help identify what is it that this person feels toward me, what have I done, or, you know, where is this relationship that it's deteriorated in this way. Well, yes, one more quick.
We have a neighbor lady who's kind of like that. I mean, she's a walking bomb shop, and everybody in the neighborhood gives them problems. So I've chosen to avoid her as much as possible. And that's kind of a way I sometimes react when I know it's just going to be trouble. If I get closer on the public history, something's going to happen.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's a cop-out, but it's a cop-out we all take at times. And, you know, we sometimes get burned and burned and burned, and we say, I don't want to be burned anymore, and so we walk away from it.
I don't believe it's a... I differ with him. I don't believe it's a cop-out. On occasion, I think it is better to walk away from. I don't think you can resolve every conflict, every struggle that you have in your life. And sometimes, and in that book, Bloomfield's book, it mentions there are sometimes it is appropriate to say goodbye, you know, walk away.
Yeah. But you can't always do that.
No, you can't. No.
Yeah, there are circumstances. I have the first 32 years of my life had tremendous conflict with my father, and I just figured out now exactly what put me over the edge, and that I truly have an unconditional love for him. And I can see him now, probably with every relationship with him now, he's still obstinate and obnoxious as he ever was.
Change
it.
No.
I hate to cut off the discussion, but Vespers is in here in about 5 minutes and they're going to ring the bell. So let me just say that the last thought is that take the exercise that we've done, continue to work with yourself and with your perception of the conflict person you're with. See if you can begin to see the other side. Remember, it's one pebble at a time. Thank you. We'll see you tomorrow, maybe.